yet. All right. All right, I'd like to call this meeting to order. This is the Historic Preservation Commission for Tuesday, March 20th, 2018. Please note that Commissioner Zinke and Commissioner Zelmer are absent. First item on the agenda is approval of the meeting minutes for February 20th. So are there any changes, comments, anything for that?
Nope.
Okay, if there's no changes, can we have a motion to approve the minutes?
I move to accept the minutes from February 20th.
Okay, can I have a second?
Seconds.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And then Collins and Solomon are abstaining.
Correct.
All right. So we're here to read the first item on the agenda is to reopen the public hearing. So we are back to record for case 2017-130, the continuing public hearing to consider a historic landmark nomination for 4 East State Street in Geneva. We had two commissioners that were absent last month, but they've been given all the documentation and everything. And so first item is to ask to see if you have reviewed all of that material.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So let's proceed with the public hearing. First item is for any public comments, people from the public that had that didn't talk last time that have new items that they would like to talk about. Is there anyone? All right. Okay, come on up.
But anyway.
Name and address.
Yeah. Sharon Jones. I live in the Geneva Place, which is at 27 North Bennett. We're in an apartment building over there, owned by the Homestead. Yeah, we moved from our home that we lived in that was a historic home from 1909, a four square over by 6th Street School, where 6th Street School used to be the library to be. Anyway, I am looking out now on the scenery over there of this area. We're talking about this item on development. And I also was co-chair of Building the River Park of Geneva to keep Chaudine from building those condominiums right on the river and taller. And we got the Mayor Coughlin at the time to buy the land back from the city and to have our river park there where our amphitheater and all of that wonderful display of native plants is, which is 20 years mature now. So I am very much attached to the river, the horizontal line, which is a characteristic of Illinois and Iowa and the Tallgrass Prairie Strait, you know. And I really feel it valuable, if it is all possible, for the historic district to acknowledge that this area right here is significant environmentally, historically. Yes, of course, some of the old Alexander, the blacksmith, all of these things are there. But even the Millrace Inn had a presence of long historic significance to all of us in this room. So I just really feel it's important if Kent Chaudine and the Chaudine family could see to have a reference to this particular site with some kind of a building there that could be reflective of its history as a place. We don't have restaurants on the east side. There are 55 apartments in Geneva Place where I live now, a high density. We would love to have something over there to access on something. And again, donate a token. It's such a small lot, and I have photos of the flood that came, you know, 3 weeks ago. Serious flooding of that area, and of course the island park, as you know, historically has flooded in other years. And it's limestone, which isn't one that is good with floods and stuff like that. I just love it if it could be used historically. And the Chaudine family, with his construction of so much of what I've seen in the 40 years we've lived here, from subdivisions to buildings downtown all along the river, I wish the organization, the Chaudine company, could keep this and appreciate the horizontal line down there. Don't build too big. Keep a reference to a restaurant down there. Call it Chaudine Park with his Swedish spelling. That's it. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Anyone else from the public that would like to speak? All right. Come on up.
He's the applicant.
Can you wait for the if any other public people? You're the applicant tonight, so.
Oh, okay. If you, didn't understand.
So you've got a few minutes after. everyone else has had the chance to talk to present. So anyone else from the public? Okay, the next thing is time for the commission to ask some questions and raise some issues. Last time we had the public hearing, we had an objection that was filed. We really didn't have a chance to look at that and review it, and so that's why we continued it to tonight. And so would like to open it up to the commission to ask questions or comment on that objection that was filed. And so once we have that, then we can go forward.
Could I ask a procedural question of staff?
You don't have your light on.
Yes. Oh, could I ask a procedural question of staff? What light? Yes. Okay. If something is not original to a building but is within the period of significance, should it be considered historic?
Per the Secretary of Interior standards and our historic preservation ordinance, we allow for periods of significance. So things that have changed over time and have gained significance in their own right during that period of significance are considered historic.
Thank you.
Do you have some other questions?
I do.
Comments?
Could I address to Mr. Campbell?
Keith's got a question for you.
Is that proper procedure?
So this is the purpose of the outline that the chairman has is to try and keep things. So what we were supposed to be doing right now is talking amongst ourselves with respect to any questions or comments we have with respect to the objection.
Okay.
Then we can call up the applicant for purposes of rebuttal and then the objector's counsel for purposes of concluding the public hearing. So if we can keep it that way, we're reducing the public record. That's the best, cleanest way.
Okay, well, actually, I have five questions that I was going to direct to Mr. Campbell that are in response to some of the objections. I thought he would be the best one to answer. So wait for later.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Any other comments on the objection that was filed?
I guess one question for staff that I had. It was noted several times in the objection about the application not being complete. Do we consider it complete? Was it received complete? Do we treat it as though it was complete?
Give your answer now.
Yes, staff determined that it was a complete nomination.
And for purposes of completeness, as you adduce and deliberate, that is for this commission to determine.
Yeah, we can talk about that.
Okay. And determining if it meets the standards and is full and complete from your perspective is a fact-finding endeavor.
Okay. All right. Any other discussion of the objections?
Oh, yeah. I was reading through this, and again, I read through it afterwards. I wasn't here. I apologize for that. When I saw the objection, I was wondering, I know we're not supposed to take structural integrity into the considerations.
For the nomination.
But I would like to ask the question, when I read through the transcript and everything else, we talked about, I think it was structural philosophy or something. There was another term that was used, I believe.
I think it was called structural integrity, which was not structural.
To the ordinance, but not part of our purview tonight.
That's right. What I said. But I was looking at, was it, I thought I saw something in there that it looked as if it was using a different word that meant integrity to me for that on a couple of things. Is that something that is allowed, Michael, or not allowed?
Well, again, in historic preservation, we use the term integrity, and there's three definitions of it that we use in the preservation field: historic integrity, architectural integrity, and structural integrity. For the purposes of determining something as being landmark worthy, we look at architectural and historic integrity. There are other times that structural integrity comes into play if work is being proposed on a building or a demolition is being proposed, but for the sake of understanding whether or not something is deemed significant enough to be landmarked, we look at historic and architectural integrity.
Okay, the word I was saying for was instability. And that was, I just looked at that and said, you know, integrity and instability to me, are they the same thing or are they different as our definition requires?
Again, instability is a structural analysis. I don't think that, and I know that it's been brought up about structural instability, but I don't think that this commission has been dealing with that question, or it's not part of the landmark application.
Okay.
And I'm not sure that's a grounds in which to be examining the, okay. the nomination at this point.
All right, other comments? I mean, I went through the whole objection, and I really didn't think much of it had to do with our purview tonight for the nomination process. It talked about procedural items, and we can certainly talk about that as a commission, but, you know, I thought it was as complete as it could be, since the applicant is not the property owner, but... and then the structural issues, that's really not what we're supposed to talk about tonight. So that was kind of my opinion on the objection, that it doesn't really apply to us tonight. Anything else?
Nope.
All right. Colin, if you want to come up, you got 3 to 5 minutes.
Okay, I'll move.
And then you got to answer all of Al's questions.
I would like to, if I may, hand out a... My name is Colin Campbell, 18 South Street in Geneva, and I am a citizen and one of the people involved in the application for historic landmarking. And I have to plead our own ignorance in this also, since none of us have ever been involved in a hostile landmarking, if I can call it that, a non-property owner's landmarking. And the regulations are new, and so we're all kind of stumbling around. We are certainly stumbling around a little bit. What I have given you and what was not really offered last month, which I wish had been, but we just didn't know exactly where we were, is a point-by-point defense of the landmarking application. On page 3 of the application itself, the first part of it, which is the background written by staff, on page 3 are the criteria under which we are working. And I've gone through and taken a look at this and have documented where we have met every one of the, or the building meets every one of the criteria for landmarking. And if you would bear with me for a minute, let me just go through it very quickly. The way I've referenced this is that the background, which is the first 3 or 4 pages, 5 pages of this application, I've got labeled as B. The nomination form itself, the one that's handwritten, is labeled as N for nomination. And then the history, which was done by staff, is labeled as E, evaluation. And I don't expect you to have to follow through all of this. I'm just going to go through it very quickly. Criteria 1, property located within the corporate boundaries, city of Geneva, yes, obviously. Property is at least 30 years old, again, obviously. Property possesses integrity of design, materials, workmanship, setting, location, feeling, and association. Integrity. If you look in, you know, I'm not going to ask you to do it right now, but in background, page 2, the nomination 7, the evaluation pages 3 and 23, it's obviously an obvious vernacular industrial building of a type that was popular in that era, and it is one of the very few left in the Fox River Valley. It's undergone changes over the 170 years, as must be expected of a building this old. A significant portion of the building, about 82%, and that's in the evaluation, page 2223, of the original walls and structure remains today. The current shed roof dates from about 1868. That's in the evaluation, page 6. The materials, building was constructed of native limestone from a nearby quarry. That's listed in background 2, nomination number 7, and E, evaluation 2 and 3. Workmanship, the building is typical of vernacular industrial buildings of that time and place. Background 2, evaluation 21. You can see these as I go, so I'll just go through it very quickly and take my word for it. Every one of these is referenced. Setting, the location of this building just south of State Street and on the mill race that powered local industry is in the heart of early Geneva. So the location is important there. Feeling, the building as it stands today unmistakably evokes the long past era of very birth of industry in Geneva, followed by decades as the core of one of the finest restaurants in the area. When the current building is viewed from either the East State Street or West Street, one can clearly see the same building that is pictured in the late 1800s photographs that were taken from those same locations. In background 4, evaluation 7, show you those pictures. Association, the building as it now stands, not only has a strong association with industry and commerce in the 19th century in Geneva, but also as the core, the fabled stone room of the Mill Race Inn, one of the most popular restaurants in the western suburbs for decades in the 20th century. Again, carefully referenced. It embodies such other qualities and characteristics as the judgment of the commission should be considered for the designation of the landmark. That's a judgment that's left entirely to you. I have nothing to say about that. Possesses one or more of the following demonstrations of significance. A broad cultural, political, economic association with historic development of a nation, state, or community. This building, during its many iterations as a factory of one sort or another, and then as a popular restaurant, contributed much to the economic development of Geneva over the 100 years encompassed by this application. As a restaurant, it also contributed significantly to the cultural and social life of Geneva after its life as an industrial site, commerce, it truly became the place, quote, where friends meet. And on the last page, you'll see a picture of the lintel where it is carved, where friends meet. B, identification with historic person, events, national, state, or local history. Julius and Edward Alexander arrived in Geneva in 1837. Julius helped found the Methodist congregation in Geneva. The Alexanders acquired considerable land along the Fox River, constructed the building in question in 1846, we believe. They operated several enterprises vital to the early commercial development of in Geneva. Now, this part is not in the application, but I think it's important. In 1878, Julius Alexander of Geneva is described as being one of the country's most honored and worthy citizens today. That represents the old families of Kane County. That's in Adam Gibbons' book, page 414. There are 25 pages in that book that describe Alexander's activities and contributions to early Geneva, so I think he could be considered significant. In the period between 1846 and 1933, a number of prominent Geneva businessmen owned the building. That's listed. And maybe the most important, in 1933, Kate Raftery encouraged and supported Anne's Forsyth in the leasing of the building and establishing the Mill Race Inn. Kate, of course, is a historic treasure in Geneva who founded the Little Traveler, the foundation of the 3rd Street Business District. She developed River Lane into an attractive residential area and encouraged, mentored, and supported many men and women in their business and cultural activities in Geneva. She is Madame Geneva, so that's an association that I think is important. Distinguishing characteristics of an architectural type inherently valuable for the study of a period, style, method of construction, or use of indigenous materials. Early vernacular structures such as this one represent a typical type of small, humble, simple building of that time and place. Very few have survived, and they are treasured historic resources. the notable work of a master builder, designer, or architect whose work and art activity significantly influenced the period of Geneva's development. While Julius and Edward Alexander may not be considered master builders, the simple feat of a pioneer moving to a wilderness area and constructing a native stone building that has survived for 170 years and served so many purposes has to be a notable achievement of history. In 1933, the building was remodeled to become the Mill Race End by August Wilson, one of the most highly regarded builders in the history of Geneva. These, along with later modifications to the building, including the fireplace, play an important role in the continuing history that that building, as it became the kitchen and the fabled stone room in the end. And I'd just like to add, if you would look at me for a moment, I don't look at all like I did 80 years ago when I was born. I've changed a lot, and that's my history, but the DNA is the same. I think it's the same for the building we have in discussion. So, as an improvement embodying all part of the above the characteristics, as it is with everything, things change with time. These changes are part of the living history of the object in question, and add to rather than detract from its significance. Should this building be demolished, all of that history outlined in this application will be lost. F was an improvement of historic architectural or cultural significance, which is threatened with demolition by public or private action. Without going into great detail, again, the cultural significance at a brown bag presentation on the history of the Mill Race Inn held at the Geneva History Museum in January 2014, which is mentioned in the application. Many in attendance recounted working often their first jobs at the Mill Race, and others recall celebrating important events in the building in question. Literally thousands of people living in this area today have fond memories of the Mill Race Inn. This is the improvement on that original building, which is threatened. An improvement with other qualities and characteristics that, in the judgment of the commission, should be considered for the designation of historic landmark. Again, the early history of a simple industrial building that was later converted into the core of an incredibly popular restaurant noted for its fine dining, significant or sophisticated ambience, is a history that's important. So as you know, the recommendation for landmarking a building requires that it meet at least one and preferably several of these criteria. I believe we've shown, and if you wish to take the time and go through and reference all of these things, that in the application that was submitted to you, we have met all of those criteria, and then some. You only need to meet a couple. Now, while it's not specifically mentioned in the criteria, I believe it's also important to note that both the background and evaluation sections of the application stress the way in which saving this building would fit into Geneva's strategic plan and often stated goal of preserving and repurposing important historical structures. And finally, I want to say this from a personal point of view. The reason that we have brought this request to the HPC is that, beyond simply asking that the 1846 building and its 170-year history be saved, we simply wish to buy time to work together with the Shodin folks, and I've already met once with Mr. Patzalt, to attempt to find a way to make the restoration and repurposing of this treasure feasible. We know that there are foundations, government agencies, and individuals who might contribute to such an effort. There's also the possibility of tax incentives, TIF funds, and other inducements for this effort. And while it's not necessarily the role of the preservation advocates to bail out a developer who has knowingly purchased a structure that is historically significant, we are more than willing to pitch in and help if we're just given the time to do it. When the Shodin Corporation initially purchased the land, they said that they were going to save the building. When they tore down the old Mill Race Inn, they did save and mothball the building, and then all of a sudden, this application for demolition came in. Had we known from the start that they had planned to demolish the building, we might have had time to find a way to make it feasible for them to repurpose it. So now we're having to go through this process instead. Can I answer any questions?
Do you have questions for...
I did. I had a lot of them, but you actually answered quite a few of them already. Thank you very much.
Anyone else from the commission have questions for the applicant?
No, actually, I still have a couple that he didn't answer.
Oh, okay.
Oh, geez, now you're going to ask me something I don't know. That's okay. Well, that...
In the application and supporting documentation, do all the photographs represent the period of significance between 1846 and 1946?
No, some of those, well, they represent that period. Some of the photographs are new, but the building that you see in the photographs that we have here is the building as it was within that time period.
Okay.
Okay, let me amend that. There may be some things that happened since 1946, but they're certainly not major.
Okay. The existing 1846 building is the original Millrace Inn that Ann Forsyth opened in 1933?
Yes, it was opened as a summer-only restaurant. There was no heat, and they had a deck out to the west that later, I believe, became the screen porch or was replaced by the screen porch. But for a number of years, it was simply a summertime restaurant.
Okay. This one has several parts, so I'll give you the question and then I'll give you the whole thing. From page 10 of 38 from the objections, in the center of the page, this is the sentence, the subject property at any given time has been converted, remodeled, reconstructed, partially demolished, burned more than once, painted, repainted, enlarged, flooded, altered, modified, shored up, and substantially rebuilt no less than what appears to be 20 times over the past century and one half. Would you say this accurately describes the existing building? And from your research, how have these events affected the historical or architectural significance of the building?
As it says in the evaluation, and please correct me if I have misread this, because this was developed by staff, the standing building that exists there today, some 83% of those walls are absolutely original. That's a significant portion of the building that was built that long ago and has been used for that many different purposes. And again, I reiterate that all of the changes that have happened in that building are a part of its history and a part of its historical significance. But it is a substantially, and again, if you stand on East State Street or West State Street and look at it and look at the pictures in here of the 1890s photograph, you recognize that old building. It's there.
That's architectural significance when you can recognize what was there.
Yes.
You sort of touched on this. Is this a typical example of a utilitarian building of the period? Are these types of buildings rare, and are there many remaining in this area?
Mm-hmm. This is one of the first limestone buildings constructed in Geneva, and it was constructed by a couple of blacksmiths, and they apparently did a pretty good job because it's still there. Originally, it did not have the shed roof. It had, we believe, it had a regular peaked roof running north to south. The objection that it has burned several times, I think probably almost every building of that nature in this town has burned several times, and a good many of them are not here anymore because they burned all the way down. That one survived the burnings. Somebody said to me recently, find me an old building without charred beams up there someplace. And so, again, in its going through being probably a paper mill, a wagon shop, a paint shop, a cooperage, and on and on and on and on, and then a dining room. Yes, there can be changes. That's its history.
That is
the DNA
history.
Is still there.
Changes over time.
Yes, but that's part of the history. You know, this happened here, and then this happened here, and this happened here. And if we are able to find a way, as we did with the Pure Oil building, to make it feasible to restore and repurpose it, it will go through more changes, and that will be a part of its history.
Finally, does the fireplace fit within the period of significance?
Yes, it does. And there are a lot of people who remember that fireplace. I'm sure it does. Didn't it, Michael? Can you help me with that? Fireplace was before 1946?
I'm going to refrain from answering that because it's your application.
Okay. I believe it is. But even if it is not within the period of significance, it is within the period of the building's life and its structure.
Okay. Do you have any other questions?
Thank you.
Does anyone else, any other commissioners have questions for the applicant?
I appreciate very much your allowing me more than 3 to 5 minutes, Scott.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Is that microphone really on? Okay. You're not very amplified.
I don't know.
Just tap your hand.
Yeah. Sorry.
All right.
I wouldn't close it. It's just not coming back that far. Okay.
All right, so we'd like to give the objector a chance to spend some time talking with us.
Thank you. So I think there's a couple things. My name's Kate McCracken. For those of you that weren't here last time, I want to go through a couple things. I appreciate Mr. Campbell's recitation of some of the information provided, but I really think we need to, the devil's always in the details. And so what I want to do is actually talk to all of you a little bit more about the details. And I also want to answer some of your questions that you asked, because some of the answers weren't exactly 100% accurate. All well-meaning, and I mean that, but not accurate. And so at the end of the day, we're here to be accurate, and I want to make sure that everybody has the appropriate information upon which to make a decision. I will tell you that while we're not here today to debate this issue, we do not believe the structure is structurally stable. We've asked the city to come and assist us in that determination, and they've declined to do so. Having said that, we strongly disagree with a statement that I believe the chairperson made, which was the objection has nothing to do with any of you tonight. The objection has everything to do with all of you tonight. There are actually very specific and 5 specific reasons which we're going to talk about why this application from an evidentiary standpoint, from a factual standpoint, and from a legal standpoint cannot be approved tonight. I also want to just, as an aside, I know that Mr. Campbell said that no one's ever been in this kind of a hostile environment or hostile application before. We're really not being hostile. This is really a difficult subject where we have a third party who's dictating what can be done with a piece of property. The issue of demolition is not new. The issue of the condition of this piece of property is not new. This has sat in its current state for months. So all we're doing is advocating on behalf of the property owner to identify what we believe our rights are and the defects that we believe exist as it relates to the application that's before you tonight. Now, I referenced the fact that I believe that there are 5 specific issues that I need each of you to walk away with and each of you to consider tonight. First of all, and there was a question asked about this right at the inception of the hearing. The fact of the matter is, and again, I don't want to harp, but the devil is in the details. The fact of the matter is, the city of Geneva has a specific application requirement. It says, if you're going to apply, for landmarking status, here's what you have to do. Here's what you have to say. Here's what you have to submit. And I'm sorry, I'm not making this up. It says you shall submit a legal description of the structure to be landmarked. Now, again, that wasn't submitted. That's never been submitted. The legal description you have in front of you is really a very, very, a minor point of part of it includes the structure to be landmarked. This applicant chose not to submit a legal description. It chose to literally pull out of a City of Geneva file a survey of the entirety of the Mill Race parcel and say that's the legal description. Well, you know what? You know what that is? The majority of that parcel is a parking lot. And last I checked, there's not a lot of historical significance to a parking lot that's been paved. So, again, my point is, when you are the applicant, and particularly when you're the applicant of a piece of property you don't own, at a minimum, you should look at the actual application requirements of the City of Geneva and then actually submit what's required. And what's required is a legal description of the structure. Because right now, what you're asked to vote on is patently wrong. It's a parking lot, not a structure. The structure is one small piece of it, and that has very material legal significance to how this goes forward. So, okay, let's all say we're going to move on from the fact that the applicant didn't comply with the requirements. At the end of the day, the applicant testified under oath. We understand we didn't comply with all the legal requirements. We were in a hurry. Fine. Then at a certain point, you as the Historic Preservation Commission have to say, okay, I'm going to deem it complete. And with all due respect to Mr. Lambert, who I respect and appreciate and like, the fact of the matter is we simply disagree. The ordinance says the applicant shall submit a legal description of the structure to be landmarked. There is no dispute that was not done. On that basis alone, the application is incomplete. And again, if I go back to the objection that was filed, the objection set forth in substantial detail a series of defects in the application. Tonight's the first night that we've had testimony to the effect that the application is deemed complete. I simply do not agree or believe that this application can ever be deemed complete when the information that was submitted was information that was never prepared by the applicant. It was information that was provided on some level to the applicant from a 2016 report by the preservation planner. That's not an application. That's a cut and paste of people's information. That's not a complete application. And if you look at the objection, you will see in specific detail a line item of 9 different specific provisions of the ordinance that were not met by the application. And I guess I have to ask all of you, if we, at the end of the day, don't require an applicant to comply with what it says you're supposed to do, how are any of us supposed to have faith in how the system works? I'm obligated to supply a legal description. I'm obligated to actually provide it correctly. I'm obligated to actually fill the forms out properly. But somehow we've gotten to the point where, gosh, that's okay. They were in a hurry. We had to do it last minute. They're okay. We'll just get them to do what they did when they can do it. I'm just not sure that's what the ordinance allows, and I certainly don't believe that's what the ordinance requires. I really do think, if you actually look at the application itself, I really do need you all to review and analyze the accuracy. I know we've been throwing around this 80% number. I think you might really want to take a real serious look at page 52 to page 67 of the actual legal record in this case. Between pages 52 and 67, you will identify at least 7 to 10 different inaccuracies in the testimony that was provided and the facts set forth in the application. Simply put, you have to read the record. The application, and again, with all good intentions, I understand that. But we're here to look at facts. You have to look at the record, and you have to look at the testimony on pages 52 to 67. If nothing else, if you ignore everything I said, you need to look at those pages, because those are the pages, and that is the testimony that goes point by point by point. Those specific alleged historic portions of what is left of the building are, in fact, not historic at all. We talked a little bit about the period of significance, and I think we have to really sort of circle back to that period of significance. The applicant talks about the period of significance being 1846. That's fine. If you actually look at the record, if you actually look at the application, you will see that pursuant to the application, there's a point at which the 1846 structure is literally identified as no longer existing. I'm happy to show you in the application, the Sanborn maps literally say, as far as we know, there's nothing there. It doesn't exist. So we're here to talk about an 1846 structure that I'm not even sure exists any further. Yes, I agree with everything he said about the wonderful memories of the Millrice Inn. I have wonderful memories of the Millrice Inn. But wonderful memories and relationships to wonderful human beings and members of the community, that does not make the ruins of what may or may not have existed at some point, that does not make ruins or remnants historically significant. There's a process, and the process that we're here to go through presumes accuracy. The application presumes, and in fact states in multiple locations, that the structure is largely intact. Clearly, a review of the testimony will show you that it is absolutely impossible to say that the structure that currently exists that we're looking at remains substantially intact. That's simply not accurate. The question is percentage. It is absolutely not percentage, 80%. It is something under 50%. But again, my point isn't to argue about percentages. It's to argue about accuracy. The fact that the Sanborn maps do not indicate anything about a structure suggests that the fire rendered the building unusable, if it even continued in existence. We have evidence of over 20 material alterations. I don't believe that you can find that the structure remains unimpaired or substantially intact when the 20 alterations, those 20 alterations were from the applicant's submittal. Literally, if you go through the applicant's submittal, you can identify what is said as over 20 material alterations, if not a reference. Just ignore the reference that the building disappeared. I can identify for you page by page every alteration. The 1846 manufacturing building simply no longer exists. The Millrace Inn that we all have wonderful memories about, that has no relationship to 1846, by the way, the Millrace Inn no longer exists. So at a certain point, we have to have credible evidence provided. And I appreciated Mr. Lambert's testimony that the standards for designation, as outlined in the Historic Preservation Ordinance, require that a property possesses the integrity of design, materials, and workmanship in order to be landmarked. But the evidence that's actually submitted, the verifiable evidence that's submitted, ends up being the exact opposite. Even a brief review of the testimony reflects a complete absence of credible evidence necessary to identify and support the integrity of design, material, or workmanship. Mr. Lambert also stated that architectural integrity under the ordinance is a determination that a structure retains its historic character and requires an evaluation of whether changes over time have resulted in undue adverse impacts. A simple review of the application, even if you ignore the objection and say that has nothing to do with us, a simple review of the application literally identifies a multitude of undue adverse impacts that renders this completely inappropriate for landmark status. Yes, I agree. It at one point was a one-story utilitarian limestone structure that existed in 1846. But ultimately, that structure no longer exists. I'm not sure if you actually look at the application submitted, I'm not sure how many more adverse impacts we could show. And that's in the application alone. That's not even in the objection. Yes, is it over 30 years old? Absolutely. Is it located in Geneva? That's fine. But there's got to be something more to it than it's located in Geneva and it's over 30 years old. I know that I said there were over five reasons that, in my opinion, you should deny the application. I think, actually, the fifth one, from my perspective, tends to be from purely a practical and a legal perspective, is probably the most troubling. I would ask all of you to take a look at the record. You will see that on the record, Mr. Hamilton asked the applicant under oath what his end game was. And the applicant, and I appreciate his honesty, the applicant answered honestly, and he said, to stop the demolition. So all of us are here not to landmark a building or a structure that's worth saving. We're all here because someone wanted to stop the demolition, and someone thankfully admitted. Our goal here is to stop the demolition and buy time. I understand that, and I understand. I don't believe that we should all be a participant in a process governed by a historic preservation ordinance where the end game is to block the owner from taking action that he has a legal right to take. At the end of the day, someone is using all of us not to protect something, but ultimately to stop, to block an action that is currently allowable and should, in fact, be allowed. I don't believe it's appropriate to take the position that I understand that I didn't submit my application properly. I understand that it's not entirely complete. I understand that I didn't cross all my T's and dot all my I's. I understand that I maybe didn't do it all the right way or submit a legal description. But I had to do it because I was in a hurry, because I just found out this property was going to be demolished. And my objective, my intent, and my motive is to block the demolition. I believe, at the end of the day, that's a complete misuse of the historic preservation ordinance. And I also want you to think about that testimony and that admission when you prepare your findings and take a vote. At the end of the day, I very much wanted to submit a summary of everything I was going to say, which would have given everybody a massive headache and would not have gone over well. In light of the fact that the applicant had the opportunity to submit something tonight, I certainly would love the opportunity to do so as well. And of equal importance, I think that we need to at least when we're reviewing and voting, that there are specific references and specific review of the actual testimony in the record, and not a complete dismissal of an objection that has been filed and rightfully filed, and which I, in fact, wanted to submit a supplemental memorandum tonight, but felt that might be a bit of overkill. So I would ask you all to consider everything that we've said tonight. I would seriously ask you not to dismiss the objection as being something that is not within your purview tonight. Every single thing in that objection is within your purview tonight. And frankly, at the end of the day, I think if you review the testimony and you review the specifics of what is required by the City of Geneva, you have no choice but to deny this application.
Thank you. So does the Commission have any questions for the objector? I was wondering if you could kind of go through these undue adverse impacts.
Sure.
And how would you describe those? And
sure.
So you made it sound like there were many.
No, and what I would like you all to do is take the actual application. Mm-hmm. Okay? And in the application itself, we get to the application. So, literally, what you can do is if you start, you literally start at page 2 of the application. You will see at some point there was a one-story building constructed, operated as a paper mill.
Excuse me, the application or the nomination?
Well,
I have the application in page 2. It's just how to fill out an application.
Okay, so the application that I have has an application and then the report that was submitted by Mr. Lambert, or prepared by Mr. Lambert in 2016, called the Evolution and Preliminary Historic Significance. Okay. Do you have that?
Yes.
That was attached to the application. So if you go through, each page, okay? So we'll go through, and I'm happy to do that, but if you go through each page, you will see probably the biggest issue is on page 4. The 1846 limestone structure was altered dramatically at some point after, obviously, 1846. We believe it was at some point in or around 1868, at least that's according to the report that was provided. Although the portion of the limestone structure remained in a form, a wood frame second floor was constructed, and it goes on to tell you the changes that were made to that building. Okay? Then if you go to page 5, you will go through a series of alterations to the building. Most of these, I will say, are a function of probabilities. There is obviously no verifiable evidence of what actually happened. This is a series of probabilities based on the information that's been concluded. But you will see doorways were inserted, walls were added, and various alterations were made to the building to allow for wagons and carriages. You will also see, chronologically, that at the point that the State Street Bridge construction commenced, the site was purchased, and again, there are several entries, while confusing, appear to reflect change of use to blacksmith shop, barrel making factory, fabrication shop, and then, lo and behold, the building was again remodeled to accommodate manufacturing equipment and to accommodate steam power. Power drives. Alterations were again made. Again, I'm now on page 6 of the application. Vents were added. And additional changes were made to the building in order to allow for additional venting. Then I love the 1842 Alexander Blacksmith Shop disappear during this time. That's page 6. So all I can say is, as I sit here looking at the application, I've got an entry in the application that says the building disappeared during what is allegedly a period of significance. Then, the next entry is, it is entirely possible that the building, after 50 years, was determined to be obsolete or in poor repair. All we know is it disappeared. We do know, at some point, a building reappeared, a roof was re-roofed, the site remained vacant. And again, we have another reference. In 1891, the Sanborn Fire Insurance map does not indicate anything about the structure at this site, suggesting that the building may not have been functional, once again suggesting that a fire may have rendered the building unusable for a time. And just as an editorial comment, yes, all buildings go through historic moments. But we're here to determine that this building, because of its history, is significant for landmarking status. I've already identified, and I'm only on page 7, where the building disappeared, where the building burned down, and where it was materially altered. And we haven't made it past 1891. We then move on. If you'd like me to continue, I'm happy to stop. I'm not enthused about hearing myself talk, so if it's your call.
All right. Do we want to hear more, or is this enough?
I can keep going, but I think you all might want to put your heads on the desk and say I give up. Well, I don't want to hear her anymore.
I think a lot of this stuff is things that we'll be talking about during our...
Once we close the public hearing?
Our remarks.
I agree. I agree. They're all right there. I mean, again, I'm happy to point them out. I'm happy to yellow highlight them. I just don't want to have everyone get sick of listening to me. I understand that feeling.
All right. I would
no comment, please.
Have, would that be acceptable to have her submit a copy with her comments?
So you have an application of which you have to adduce evidence. There is an objection which contests the propriety of the application. What Mr. Campbell provided is a summary. It is not evidence of anything. It's argument. You're going to go through your deliberation process based on the application and the objection and applying the facts as you see them pursuant to the code. That's going to be your job. If counsel wants to submit something supplemental, that's certainly something you can provide her with an opportunity if you deem it necessary. However, if you feel the record is full and complete and you want to deliberate based on that, you have a record to do so.
Yeah, I would rather not.
I'm good with what we have.
Okay. Is everyone else fine? Okay. All right. Thank you. Any other questions?
Oh, please.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. So since we've heard from the applicant again and the objector, and we've asked all the questions that we have of the applicant and the objector, I think that it's an appropriate time to close the public hearing and start our discussion.
Chairman?
Yes?
I do have one other piece of information I'd like to read into the record or present to
everybody. Okay.
A letter was received today from Landmarks Illinois, a second letter to their first letter. And I'm just going to enter it into the record. You all have it.
Okay.
Thanks.
And just in summary, Landmarks Illinois is expressing their support of designation and, again, identifies the new item that they're identifying is that there are other early buildings in Illinois that are, let's see, let me just read this part. They mentioned two other buildings in Illinois that are listed in the National Register of Historic Places in their deteriorated state before rehabilitation, and they've attached some pictures to that effect.
We've heard all the evidence. Now it's an appropriate time to close the public hearing. So could we have a motion to close the public hearing, and then we can start our discussion?
Move to close public hearing.
I have a second.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. So now it's up to us to talk about this.
Could I request now that we continue the debate at a future time when all members of the commission could be present?
You can certainly do that. I mean, one of our commissioners is...
Well, we have quite a bit new information that we need to absorb a little bit. Plus, I think it would be to our advantage to have the full commission here to discuss.
To me, we're only missing one person, one commissioner, so... Well, we need to wait for that one person to...
I would request that we do our deliberations at the next HPC meeting.
How does the rest of the commission feel about that?
A complete commission would have less questions. So I would Second it.
Yeah, I'm just not sure what additional information we're going to get. Additional discussion, I guess, from the one commissioner that's missing.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying that, plus I think I have a page of written questions that I put down on my notebook just from the information that Ms. McCracken gave us that I guess I could kind of sift through it now, but I have some things that I'd actually like to research.
But that's, I mean, since we've closed the public hearing, we can continue the discussion, or okay. All right, I will leave it up to the rest of the commission.
I think a motion has been made in a second, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So what I would suggest, Mr. Chairman, is that you vote on the motions that's on the floor, unless someone makes another motion.
We're doing a motion, Mr. Close.
It's a request.
I thought.
No, he made a motion to continue it.
Right.
And Commissioner Solomon seconded that. All right. So you want to take a voice vote on how?
Take a roll call.
A roll call, okay. So the motion on the floor is to continue this to the April meeting?
Continue the deliberation until the April meeting, which would be April 17th.
Okay.
Hamilton?
No.
Miller?
Yes.
Solomon?
Yes.
Holland?
No.
Roy?
No.
Motion fails.
Okay. All right. So you had some questions that you wanted to talk about with the commission?
Well, let's let the discussion go on, and I'll jump in as need be.
I mean, I think the objector was talking about the whole process or the application, and was it complete or was it not complete, and I think we should discuss that a little bit. And I mean, my position is some of the items that were not completed were primarily because they're not the property owner. So I think getting surveyors to come in and put together a legal description for the specific structure, I don't think they had the possibility to do that. So
yeah, this was, I struggled with this one myself. Mm-hmm. I believe if you're going to fill out an application, it should be done correctly.
Right.
But, you know, if
there's certain things that you cannot do, do you just discount the whole application because those are things that couldn't be done?
That is what the ordinance says, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've been critical in the past of people not following the ordinances. And, you know, if the ordinance says if the application is not complete, it is not to be rendered. It's something to ask down on legal terminology. But to me, that's one.
Okay.
Right, or right off the bat that says it's not complete.
Sure.
So, I mean, from the standpoint of, you know, I know everybody wants to give their opinion. But from the standpoint of the legality of it, it's just not complete. And the ordinance says... Am I mistaken?
Let me read to you what the ordinance says, because the question of completeness versus the legal description argument that counsel makes, frankly, are distinct. The question of completeness is for you to adduce, to look at the application and see if it meets the standards as you determine what completeness is. There is no language in the code that says it shall be complete. The relevant language, which is set forth in 1066 under the historic landmark designation, is found in paragraph 2, which is a longer paragraph that talks about the application. With respect to the legal description, the provision says the application for historic landmark designation shall be submitted in writing and shall contain such information, including a legal description of the building, structure, object, improvement, or site. And I want to make sure I'm clear on that. And be in such form as the commission shall, by rule, prescribe from time to time. So, I'm going to tell you from a legal perspective that the legal description does not identify the structure, but does describe the site. You can determine it doesn't, you don't feel it's accurate enough in your deliberation. You can also determine that you think more information or less information or better information should have been supplied. And then ultimately, if you determine you wish to adduce and deliberate on the merits, it either makes you either make a recommendation that the ordinance is followed substantially or it isn't in your fact-finding endeavors.
Thank you. So, again, my position is there are certain things in the application that the applicant could not come up with because they are not the owner. They are not the property owner. So walking the site and having surveyors do legal description and some of those things, I just don't think that that's something that is.
I think that, you know, when Ms. McCracken described that, she did say that the building legal description in the ordinance described just the building, and then she said that it was the entire lot, when actually the it does say the site. I mean, I X that off just as one of my questions.
Can I just clarify my comment? Okay.
There is an operation process. The record's the record.
So if
you're buying a house, you have to get a legal description.
But we're not talking about buying property.
You're still looking at what would be required in that type of situation.
Does it say anywhere on the application how an applicant should obtain a legal description, or how should he obtain a legal description?
And I don't think so.
No, the application doesn't require that. We typically rely on the records of the Kane County Recorder's Office.
And that's where this description came from, I think.
It matches what's at the Kane County Recorder's Office.
Okay, so I guess the question is, so do we have a complete application to review tonight?
I mean, you know, as far as, you know, specific description, you know, legal description, you know, I think as far as the application, you know, it's very well evident what we're talking about. I mean, it's not, you know, whether or not what the specific numbers and digits are for that building are relevant or true, but we know what we're talking about. It's not like there's five buildings over there. There's one
right
that we're all aware of. So, as far as I'm concerned, it's got enough information for it to be accurate description of the building in question.
Okay. Any other comments on that?
One thing on the nomination itself, and I should know the difference, but I don't, is it's got a tax assessor's parcel ID number.
That's for the site.
That's for the site.
Right.
So that's not the building.
Yeah. Right.
The building is on
by
the
ordinance,
site.
That's okay.
Okay. To me, the other item with the objection is that the application says that the
Chairman Roy, just as a clarification, since the legal description is brought up, just so you're aware, all other individual landmark sites in the city of Geneva, the buildings are what are considered historic, but the legal description that goes along with them is the legal description for the property in which they sit.
So
the way all individual landmark properties have been identified in the past here.
All right. Thank you. So the next item was the application says the property is, or the building is 83% complete from whatever period of time that is, whether it's 1846 or 18.
I made a note that on page 3 of 38 in the objections, it said in the middle of the page, staff states in its report on page 3 of 5, quote, dot, 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 the numerous expansions sacrificed portions of the original limestone walls at the east, north, and west sides of the original structure. What was truncated from that sentence, I think, ought to be brought in because the beginning of the sentence says, although the majority of the original limestone walls in the 1933-era windows were exposed in the three dining rooms, the numerous expansions sacrificed portions of the original limestone walls to the north, east, and west. So the implication was that there was more, there was less there than really was.
Right. And I guess my question is, And we've debated this issue on other topics, too, is so what makes it substantially substantially like the building that we're trying to landmark? And I don't think we can come up with a specific percentage. If it's 51% or 60% or 83%.
Yeah, I think, the timeline description that Ms. McCracken brought up regarding all the changes with the building, if you think about it, you know, that was all the historical changes in technology over the years,
right,
which the building evolved with.
Yeah, and the uses, too.
Correct. I mean, you know, they talked about having to change it because of steam issues, of having venting issues, you know, and having to make parts of it bigger for wagons. I mean, this is all changes in the growth of the country and the growth of technology.
Right.
And this building survived with it and grew with it. So, you know, of course it's not going to be 100% original because it's still here.
Right.
So, I mean, there are thousands of buildings around this country that did the same thing. There's one in Washington, D.C. that kind of evolved over the years and also was burned down in the 1800s and was rebuilt.
Yeah. Still, and that's kind of why I wanted to go through the undue adverse impacts. I think those impacts were part of the history of that building, and it's reflective of the different uses and the different builders that that touched that building. And so
I didn't really grasp it until it was really kind of like played out with us there before, that really this building evolved through technology and changes in uses and occupants.
You know, I think it's fair to say that most buildings change over time, and that's allowed by the Secretary's standards. Mm-hmm. You know, we have early photographic evidence of what the building looked like in 1890s and so on. Generally, for architectural significance, you know, my basic rule is if someone came back from the past and walked past that building, would they recognize the building now as it sits from what it was 100 years ago?
Right.
And, you know, when you answer yes to that question, you're saying, okay, then it has architectural integrity. It's still what it was.
And the other thing they bring up is about the fire, and we're not really sure what happened, what was damaged with the fire, and how that was categorized. And so what are your comments on that?
Well, I think that falls in the same as the structural integrity. It had a fire. There are a lot of buildings that have fire. It's the structures are still there.
Mm-hmm.
The beams are still there. They may not be as strong as we'd like them to be, but
they're there.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what on the Sanborn maps, if they said there's no longer a building there, what does it? I don't know what that is defined as. I mean, if the limestone walls are still up, but there's no roof on it, is it deemed that it's not a building anymore because it doesn't have a roof? Or and then does it matter if we've really got an 1868 building rather than an 1846 building? I think it still warrants having a lot of the architectural integrity and the historical integrity from prior to 1900.
Right.
So,
when was this? This is for staff. When were the earliest Sanborns?
The earliest Sanborn map for Geneva was, I believe, 1885 or 1887.
Within
2 years there.
What maps are we referring that it doesn't show up on?
I think the reference is to the 1891 map, where it's identified as ruins. the Sanborn maps are quite complicated to understand, so you have to know what that means in the context of a Sanborn map.
Oh, yeah. I know if a building isn't occupied or, you know, it's not being used, they would know, they wouldn't need insurance information on it.
That was the purpose. The maps were recorded for the purpose of insuring buildings.
Okay. On page 36 of 38 of the objection, middle of the page again, one need only look at actual landmark buildings throughout the state of Illinois and landmark utilitarian buildings throughout the country to see how lacking in the necessary integrity of design and material the remaining structure is. I actually am glad that Landmark Illinois gave us this thing tonight because it clearly shows some buildings that are in probably as bad or worse condition as what we have. And these are examples of buildings now that are landmarked and being preserved. So.
Yeah, and have been rehabilitated.
Right. I would like to see that. Actually, I would have hoped that we could have seen some buildings that were actually finished or...
All right, other comments?
Michael, I saw someone here that asked if the property landmark is going to be referenced in Geneva, Kane County, or the National Historic Preservation. What does that mean?
That purpose of that checkbox is to, if it's already been nominated to a, like, for instance, the National Register, then that National Register nomination should probably be attached to the nomination. It doesn't make it any more or less significant. Those are checked or not checked. It's really a kind of a check and balances to make sure the information is not being repeated or unnecessarily. It can be gathered from other sources. It's just a checklist, basically.
All right. Other comments, questions? We have enough information put together to put a motion together. Been very quiet.
Notes.
Is there any questions that among the commissioners that we have with each other? Do you have a question?
A suggestion, Mr. Chairman. Given that the standards are set forth in the ordinance, it may be, obviously this is a prerogative of the chair and obviously the commission itself, you may want to go through the five steps and just say, is there consensus or agreement that the five matters have either been adduced and proven or they have not? And maybe that will help make sure we have a clear record if there's a recommendation or a denial based on the five standards set forth in the ordinance.
Yep. And those were outlined by the applicant?
They're in the application. I can point them to you. They're in the actual landmark ordinance 1066, item B near the end. It's basically, and it's in the application too, are standards for designation of historic landmarks. The Historic Preservation Commission shall not recommend nor the City Council grant a designation of a historic landmark unless each body makes findings based upon the evidence presented to it, each specific case in each specific case, and that the proposed historic landmark meets all the following five requirements. And one is the easy one, located in the corporate boundaries, right? And then it goes through the other four items. And I think it would probably be good for record making and evidence collecting purposes if the commission determined if the five have been made or if they have not.
Okay.
Just so as you know, nobody's confused, in the application, the five are broken down into eight check marks, so they were uniform check boxes and nothing got missed. And the ordinance has five, but the fifth one has multiple parts to it.
Yeah, and that was put together in the paper that the applicant brought to us today. First item one is it located in the city of Geneva? I think we can all agree with that. Number two is it at least 30 years old? And I think we can agree with that. And then item three is property possesses integrity of design, materials, workmanship, setting, location, feeling, and association. So do you think the application, do you think the property... follows that one?
I think if we consider it the type of structure, the manufacturing early in the history of Geneva, I would say yes.
Okay. Does everyone else agree?
I agree on the materials and the workmanship, setting, location. In terms of the design, I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's according to design. I mean, when I look at it now, I couldn't make that statement. Because I don't know. Well, you're looking at the current condition. But we're looking at possesses the integrity of the design. I'd say that's iffy at best.
Does it look like it did 100 years ago?
I agree with everything else that we talked about.
Okay.
But the design to me is iffy at best.
And how are you stating the design?
The design of what we're looking at, we can only look at what we see.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what has happened in 1847, what has happened in 1893, they're all different designs. I mean, they've made changes to this thing that we are looking at. We're making some suppositions on things. What happened here, what happened there. I don't think any of us were around. So I can only make the determination on what I can see now, what I've known, coming out here to Mill Race, being in the area.
Mm-hmm.
It's iffy.
I think we also, though, have photographic evidence of what it looked like during the period of significance.
During the period, but then it changed as we went along.
Right.
So that, to me, is iffy. The materials are probably going to stay the same because you're pulling materials out of this area. We're not pulling materials out of some other area.
Right.
They're coming out of here.
Okay.
So the design is the iffy part to me.
Well, okay. There's definitely change over time where some of the repairs and things were done, but basically I don't think the building has been modified. If you stood with the picture of the original building from the early 1890s and stood at the same location on State Street, looked at that building, you would recognize it as the same building.
I just looked at the design, and I'm looking
at it.
I'll use you an example. The chimney. There was two different chimneys in there. One was in early, one was later.
Oh, I see.
So you have a lot of design changes that have gone through the package.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay. I mean, it's just not, we're going to sit here and say, this is the building that exists. Back in 1848,
right?
Is it?
Right.
Okay. But we don't know what that building really looks like.
Saying, that's what I'm saying. So the design, I'm not sure the integrity of it. I mean, it's just the same as somebody else saying the materials is a mute point, because we're guessing on those too. But we have a little better, as working in that business, you have a little bit better understanding of where the materials are come from and what you're trying to do to keep those materials in those areas. We do it all the time.
So it has some of the items for some of them qualities for number three, but not all of them.
I think it has a majority of the qualities of number three, but once again, there are some that we just, no matter how hard we try, we'll never know.
We never know.
Sure. Item number four was embodies such other qualities and characteristics as in the judgment of the commission should be considered for the designation of a landmark. And I would say yes. I just think that this is a structure that has lived over the last decades. And
I know we're not supposed to talk about, the property rights, but when you're, what was the comment?
We're not supposed to talk about them. We probably shouldn't.
Well, we're talking about the structural integrity. We're also making assumption. I mean, if we're talking that way, then it's based on what I think is we need to follow the law. If we're not going to follow the law, then they should, my interpretation of the law, and that's what I'm going by, is if we're going to follow the interpretation of the law, then I follow it. it's not something that says, we like to, maybe. But that, to me, is still the same thing. It's the same thing you're interpreting down on item 4, embodies such other qualities and characteristics as in the judgment of the commission should be considered for designation of landmark. You know, I look at that, and there's nothing in there that tells me, you know, it's fine, but, you know, we're looking at someone else's property. Okay? And that's, it's something I know says, no. But I've watched our...
Isn't that for the next level? I mean, we're supposed to be focused on architectural and historical significance, and you're basing your decision on something else.
Well, I'm also basing it on historic integrity, but I'm looking at, when I read through here, the term historic significance is throughout this, but no one disputed it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I'm looking at, again, my interpretation of the law on the application is, this is what was supposed to be done. If I do something halfway in my business, it gets thrown out. Mm-hmm. I don't care how much time I had, I still had to do it.
Okay. Right. But we're just a part of the whole process here. We're not the end of
right,
the process.
Right, we're not seeking an influence in what they're going to do with the property. We're just talking.
I agree. But I mean, I'm looking at the first one where I look at the application. You know, what is the legal part of that? And in my interpretation. Is that it wasn't filled out the way it was supposed to be to come in here and make it to say, here it is, I followed everything in the ordinance. Make it clear to us. You know, so the interpretation is the same five people are looking at the same five things. And I see that throughout in other cases. And it was, when I went through here, I know Michael said, I make sure I read everything and go through it. I highlighted all these areas, and I tried to highlight them on here to look at it. And I took some liberty with the term historic significance and historic integrity. To me, it was kind of the same thing.
Okay. But so what did you highlight? What are the issues that came up that you were concerned about?
Well, I looked at historic significance. Okay, I mean, so I went through things like that. As I went through and said, okay, here's what we had. I mean, so that was my way of evaluating what I had here.
So what do you think is lacking in historic significance or historic integrity?
Well, his historic significance is it's what's there now. Yeah, I'm not sure what's left. I look at the chimney.
Okay.
I look at the roof. I look at some of the mortar that was put to the bottom of it to keep it in place structurally.
But and to me, that's the structural integrity or the physical integrity. But a lot of the application has to do with the historic integrity,
But is it historic now? I mean, with everything they had. You're just going to stay there. I mean, it was the same thing when the commission looked at the building behind the old courthouse. It was the same comments on this because I remembered coming here because that was our client at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the same comments back then.
Yeah.
So.
And we held that view. As a commission, we held that view the whole time.
Yeah.
And we got voted down by city council. And
so I'm looking at that, and I look at what happened. So, I mean, this is my interpretation. That's all. I'm not here to...
But I guess today what we want to do is that argument valid enough, whether city council agrees with it or approves it, that's another thing.
Well, whether
that's
you...
the next
whether
step.
You or Jim or George agrees with what I say, I mean, it's still not a one-person rule here. So I'm just giving you my interpretation of what I see and what I heard.
Mm-hmm.
And what I heard from the council from Geneva and also from our planner.
So do you think that it does not have the architectural integrity?
Put it all together with the application, with the design, with the historic integrity as, or, you know, because I'm looking at its sustainability, is this the same thing? So that's, you've asked me for my opinion, what I said, I'm bringing it to you, and we can you can discuss it. That's kind of where I'm at.
Okay. I mean, I would say that it does have the historical integrity, and I think it has the physical integrity. What happens with it in the future is still at issue, but that's really not in our purview tonight to talk about it. So,
but we've already seen that been overruled and other things.
Well, I don't want to go down that road and say, oh, well,
neither do I.
Someone's going to turn it down, so we should just turn it down.
We don't know that.
We don't know that. That's, yeah, I understand.
Yeah. So what are other comments, kind of closing comments then for the commission before we make a motion?
So I was listening to Mr. Collins' comments, and I do not want to put words in his mouth because he had
right.
pretty broad set of opinions that are certainly substantial and something that is he can defend. I think it may help us, though, if we go through these items. Whether he puts that in number 3 or 4 or 5 or whatever, for him, that's his perspective. Others may agree or disagree, which is, obviously everyone's right. perspective. But it may do good to identify whether they think, whether there is consensus on whether there is, whether this application meets the items identified in 3, 4, and 5 or not.
All right. So I saw nods and stuff, but I guess that's not going to go in the public record. So.
Well, yeah. On number 4, I certainly think it has the qualities and characteristics, in my judgment, to be considered landmark. The integrity, the significance, the integrity both historic and architectural.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
it, and I agree with that.
The building, I think it qualifies.
I think our report that we requested truly documents the historical significance. I think the petitioner has come forward and itemized and pointed out where a lot of this stuff is in our own documents and in other documents, and did a fair job of pointing out historic significance, architectural significance. Like I said earlier, if it looks the same now as it did 100 years ago, that's all I need for architectural significance. I'm comfortable with that. I mean, yes, there are changes over time, but that's allowed by Secretary of Interior standards. Even things like the chimney could be considered part of that period of significance, because we know that Ann Forsyth used that used the fireplace to heat the building originally. So there could be the extra chimney you're talking about. So those things could be all probably worked out if we had time to actually research this. But I think that would... So I have no problem with either of these historical integrity or architectural integrity.
Yep, I agree.
I concur with Jim and with Al.
And I looked at the back of item 5. If you had one, it fits, because that's what it says.
Right.
I mean, there's other issues I have on there, but since it says only one, then, it's hard to argue with 1 out of 6.
All right. So have we exhausted our discussion? Is there more things to talk about? Okay, if there's not, we would like to form a motion in the affirmative, something that we can vote on.
Chairman, just a point. There is nothing in the ordinance remanding you to make a motion, make a determination. That you can if you'd like. I just want to remind everybody that the ordinance does allow you to take 45 days from the close of the public hearing to make a recommendation to the City Council. So it's your freedom to do either way. If you want to make it tonight, that's fine, but you do have up to 45 days by ordinance.
Well, I think if we had a lot of stuff to talk about, then we would... then I think we should look at that. But it seems like we've talked it through as much as we can.
And there is one thing that there's a chance I may not be here on the 17th. I mean, so you're back to
right.
Five.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just, all transparency aside, there's a chance I will not be here on the 17th.
Yeah, I think we've kind of exhausted the discussion, and so I think it's time to put a motion together. So who is our most eloquent commissioner?
Who talks the most to me? I'll make a motion. I move that we approve landmark designation for or proposed historic landmark designation for 4 East State Street as presented.
Mr. Hiller, the motion should be to recommend or not recommend.
Yes.
Because that's this board, this commission is recommending.
Yeah,
so
we're not going to landmark it ourselves today.
Oh, yes. Okay. Hi. So.
And then do you want to reference those 5 items?
So I'm recommending that we move forward with the process. Tell me what I'm recommending. Maybe I'm not the most eloquent one here.
The motion may be to recommend that the City Council grant designation of historic landmark on the application as presented.
Okay.
What he said.
Ditto.
You got that?
I will try it one more time. I would make a motion that we approve this application to move forward to City Council for a landmark designation.
All right. How about if we try make a recommendation that we recommend to the City Council to accept the application that was presented tonight?
I thought that's what you said.
Being said that.
And by the way, no critiquing. This is not easy stuff. And I remind everyone here, it's a voluntary board. It's hard stuff. Parliamentary procedure is not for the faint of heart. And this is important stuff. So please let me know. You guys are doing a great job. What I'm going to recommend that the motion be is a motion to recommend that the City Council grant designation of historic landmark status upon the property, and then identify the property or identify the application. That would be what I would suggest would be a proper motion. Of course, to be completely fair, a motion to deny on the same criterion is also a fair motion.
Okay, so I move to recommend that the motion for landmark designation be approved and forwarded to the City Council based on the five criteria for landmarking.
All right. Can I have a second?
A second.
All right. You're up for us, Michael.
Okay. Do you need me to read the motion back? I hope not.
No. No. Just do the roll call.
Okay. Hamilton.
Aye.
Hiller.
Aye.
Salomon.
Aye.
Collins.
No.
Roy.
Aye.
The motion carries 4-1.
All right.
This will move forward to the Committee of the Whole. Tentatively, it will be moving forward on April 9th.
April 9th,
2018.
Okay. And then we'll do a short presentation with City Council on this.
Yes, there would be, yes.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for the commission and the applicant and the objector. All right. And I've been told that we should have a 5-minute break so we can stretch our legs and move on to the next item on the agenda.
going to make these easier.
Yeah.
Maybe.